It's time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal, and we have on the telephone, actually, Cynthia Hoswinter. Good morning, Cynthia. Oh.
Good morning. You're my hero. You're so great. Thank you.
I don't know about that.
You have no idea. And I'm just listening going, oh, you know, this is sort of like calling somebody's house and you hear things crashing in the background and the dogs barking and this, and you go, oh, okay, yeah, well, is this a good time?
Well, you know,
years ago, being on air and sitting and looking at a brand, you know, years ago, if I was sitting here on air looking at a brand new on-air computer and it was completely blank and the production computer is not responding, I would have panicked. But you know what? After 65 years, nah.
No, it's not 65 years. It's just, and we were sort of talking about this yesterday. If you wrote, it's kind of boring, but you cannot make this stuff up. That goes with our, that goes with the things. If you went through the handbook with a, you know, or the manuals or the chat rooms with a fine tooth comb, you couldn't find the stuff that happened.
Yeah.
It's so bizarre.
All right. Well, let's get on to see what's going on at the Lakeville Journal. Very, very pretty picture on the front page of a completely frozen over Lakeville Lake.
Not just the frozen lake, but the beautiful sky behind it. So Ann Day, who we're so lucky to have as part of our little Lakeville Journal family now, sat and waited by the side of Lakeville Lake until she can get just the right mix of skaters and sky, and we were lucky to get that photo. And as she said, that's the big story of this week, which is the weather. It's been unbelievably cold. Don Mayland, we actually didn't get it into the little photo cut line there, but Don Mayland, who is the ice watcher for Lakeville Lake, said this is the first time in many years when the lake has frozen over before January 1st.
Yeah, it was. It's been amazing. We just had somebody contact us yesterday. Now, never mind freezing. It's been now 11 days since we've been over 20 degrees.
Yeah. I'm from Chicago. This reminds me of my childhood in a really bad way. and before I forget, I'd like to say the Lakeville Journal offices are closed today because of the weather, but we should be open tomorrow. All things, if everything works out.
All right, and I will take your Chicago, and I will raise you Buffalo.
All right. So
yeah.
Let's go away from Chicago and Buffalo, and let's go to the Lakefront House, the famous house in Salisbury, Lakeville area.
Right, and actually, I think all of us in local journalism know about this ongoing dispute, but I think most people don't really realize there's a lot of protection that goes on, in theory, of the residential lots around Lakeville Lake, which is a very beautiful lake. People are very proud of it in our town, and they want to protect it from things like runoff, but also just from blocking of the views. And many years ago, there was a house that was built. It was a very, very large house, and it was even written about in the New York Times, and it was seen more that as more than just this is a big house, but as we've always done this a certain way around the lake. We've always had little cottages. We've always kind of tried to keep pretty low-key. And I would say that that's changed over the last 15, 20 years. So a fairly large house is built. It was built fairly close to the water, even though there are very strict regulations. And the Planning and Zoning Commission and the Zoning Enforcement Officer felt that it met the town's regulations. But a neighbor of this new property, who is an attorney, had aggressively pursued over the last 3 years, trying to get the certificate of occupancy revoked on this house. So the Zoning Board of Appeals has finally ruled on it, and they said, you know, out of the objections that you have, we actually don't feel that those are legitimate, and the house can stay.
All right. It's been such a long thing, and hopefully it doesn't happen again. We'll see, though. It's hard to tell.
It does seem like the houses are getting bigger and bigger on that lake.
And people want to protect the lake more and more and more. There's an easy, delicate balance that has to go on there.
Yeah.
You know, I can remember the Northeast Community Center before Jenny Hansel got there, and it was fine what they would try to do. But when you look at the Northeast Community Center before Jenny and after Jenny, because she's leaving, you can see the amazing amount of work that not only she but the board has done over the years.
Right. I've been comparing it to Jennifer Dowley and the Berkshire Taconic Community Foundation, which was also a perfectly excellent little organization. And then once Jennifer took it over, it went world class. Jenny Hansel has done the same thing with the Northeast Community Center, which was, you know, just what it sounded like. It was a little community center. They had some programs. When she stepped in, it had been at a fairly low point, the way she describes it. She's a friend of mine and my former neighbor in Sharon. And it's just sort of a smart, thoughtful, creative person and came in sort of as a part-time, you know, mom looking for ways to entertain her own kid and helping out this community center. And she's grown it into this very formidable organization in the little town of Millerton. It seems like everything fun that goes on in Millerton somehow is connected back to NECC. So Jenny and her husband Fred have two daughters. The daughters are both away at school. Jenny and Fred are sort of looking, you know, in their mid-50s, thinking, like, we'd like to have another, one last big adventure in our life. So they had started looking around. Fred is now leaving his job at Sarah Lawrence and going to Mount Holyoke. Jenny is leaving after 17 years the Northeast Community Center, and she's taking a job with the Berkshire Natural Resources Council, which is up in Pittsfield. And the saddest part for me, of course, is they're moving out of the area. But we'll hope that we still hear from them.
Absolutely. That's a great picture of Jenny on the front page.
Another and a great shot.
Cynthia, your story, Pride, Hope, and Plans Forming for Future of Industrial Sites.
The State Historical Society and the State Trust for Historic Preservation do some very interesting projects, and one of them they did a few years ago was barns, and we had that really bad snowstorm winter a few years ago, and a number of the historic barns in the area had collapsed under the weight of the snow, and fortunately the state had started to take photos and records of some of those barns so that they could be, and so you can go back and have a historical record of it. So they're doing something similar now with industrial sites throughout the state. And it's surprising because you think of the Northwest Corner as being this place that had industry in the early 1900s, but not really after that. But there's actually a lot of industrial sites in all of our six towns, and of course in Winsted and Norfolk, that are still existing. Some of them are still operating. And so what they're doing is they're collecting data and photos on the state website, and information is in the article on how to get there. So you can sort of see what's in your town, but they also have information on programs that are helping people do adaptive reuse on these mill sites, is what they're, for instance, what they're doing in Winsted, where there's a lot of interesting stuff going on with those sort of long abandoned old buildings. So it's pretty neat.
And from that, let's go to Nature's Notebook with Tim Abbott.
And Bernie Drew, who is our wonderful front page editor, had threw a little pun in the headline, which is Beaking News at the Feeder. But it's a really interesting Tim Abbott article, and he talks about the expectation that all of this cold weather is going to drive some northern birds down from Canada and northern New England, and that people will start to see some fairly exotic species for this area at their feeders. And he said, so far that's not happening, but we'll just see what happens after this weekend. And he talks about some of the unusual species that he's seen in past really cold snaps. So if you're a birder, that's a very interesting article to read.
All right, we will go on to the inside of the paper right now, and we'll go to A3, and a town meeting will decide Lee H. Kellogg fund expenditures.
Yes, and it's the phone system, and a lot of the schools. It's funny, you know, I'm such a non-phone person. I'm sitting here talking to you on my cell phone. I don't even have a landline, but of course, all of the schools still have these very complex, and most office buildings have these very complex systems of landlines. Kent Center School, I believe, replaced theirs last year or the year before, and of course, there's always glitches, as you know, with new technology. Lee H. Kellogg School is now looking to replace its own phone system.
And then we go to Winsted with Shaw. This scared me a little bit because under the headline, under Lee H. Kellogg School, it says A Tale of Two Schools, which would remain open. I'm saying, is this something about Kellogg and the Cornwall?
Yeah. Well, because as you're pointing out, this is something that's not just regional, it's national, which is population worldwide is peaking. School age population is declining, and so I think people forget that it's not just in the six towns of Region 1 that the class sizes are getting smaller. It's everywhere. So, and part of the advantage that we find of covering Winsted now in our reconfigured Lakeville Journal is we want people to be able to see and get a little perspective on what's happening outside of a six town. So there's two really interesting stories by Shaw about the school district in Winsted. One is on this page, one is on the next page. This is one where the town of Winsted, their school district had gone into receivership, and they have this very interesting new superintendent of schools named Melanie Brady Shanley, and she's faced some very hard, tough decisions. So the running of the budgets just went back into the hands of the town. It had been in receivership, and they'd closed down while the system was in receivership one of their schools. Both of the schools had been built in the 1950s. They shut down one of the schools, took all the kids, moved them over to another school for their middle school. And now that they have control of the schools back, they're looking at these two buildings and saying, which one actually should be shut down and which one should be continuing as the repository school for these two school population's worth of children. It's going to be a very interesting ongoing conversation. And, you know, as you said, it's something that we're looking at here. It's going to be, I think, everybody from our Region 1 school district, it'd be very instructive to watch what's going on in Winsted.
All right. And a couple of nice colored pictures. That's a big, that's another color page here.
Yeah.
Is that it?
We were lucky to have a lot of nice color. And Bernie Drew had suggested, because we've been doing these periodic recaps of stories throughout the year, because it's hard to follow some of these stories that sort of happen, you know, in small increments, we've been doing them periodically already. And it used to be that for the January 1st issue, the first issue of the new year, we would do a recap of the whole year. But we had just done one at Thanksgiving time. So Bernie Drew had suggested, hey, we have all these great photos that we don't use in the paper because we don't have space for them. So we've taken some of our favorite photos that didn't run, and we're using them as a way to kind of remind everybody of some of the smaller, less complex issues that have happened. For instance, on this page, we have Audubon Sharon. They're everywhere. Anytime that there's a large population of young people, there's almost always an Audubon presentation. This is a wonderful photo that Patrick took last spring at Housatonic Valley Regional High School. Below that is Eliza Luminati doing her her science fair project at Sharon Center School last June. And just, again, a nice reminder that every year there's that big, all the kids show all the stuff that they've been working on all year. It's a great time of year.
Let's go to page A4 and A5. I mean, you guys are going crazy with color.
You know, we're very lucky, and if Janet were on the phone, she would remind us the reason we're able to do color is when we have advertisers who buy a color page, because we can't afford the additional incremental cost, you know, except for special occasions. It really helps us when our local advertisers buy color, and that allows us to have color on our pages. Oh. So this is, again, another our school's page. We have the Arts Fund for Region 1, the wonderful high school musical performance from last spring. The next one coming up is The King and I in March, which we're hoping March will come very, very soon. Looking forward to that. And, of course, Salisbury Central School. The kids actually asked if they could do a play. Lisa Carter said yes. And if you can see in that photo, they got great participation from the student body and did a nice production of The Wizard of Oz. And then here's the other story from Shaw about the Winsted School District. And the Winsted School District is very complex. And I won't even try to explain it, but basically they're looking at the buildings that they have and trying to figure out where they should be investing money. And once again, saying we need to be attracting families with, you know, young children to our town. That's what keeps our town vibrant. How are we going to do it? That's an issue that every single one of the towns in our coverage area, really in America, is facing right now. So whether or not you live in Winsted, a very interesting story to read.
All right. And down below that in Sharon, adjustments to the heating and cooling at school.
And this is actually interesting because a couple years ago, an architect had come through, had been hired by several of the schools. He had been in charge of the renovation of Housatonic. Everybody had liked him. So he came to the individual schools and he said, you know, you really need to be looking at doing these, you know, XYZ jobs at your school. And they were these multi-million-dollar checklist of things that needed to be done, and all the school boards kind of balked at it and said, we don't have that money. We're not able to do it. But they looked at it and they said, here's the essential things we need to do. So at Sharon Center School, they had to do some adjustments to the heating and cooling system. So that's the small incremental first step of some upgrades to that school. But all of our schools, like the schools in Winsted, are reaching a point where, you know, it's 50, 60 years since they were built. They're all going to need some major investment of funds.
All right. The gingerbread, look at that.
Yeah, isn't that incredible? I made one little gingerbread house. I was so proud of myself for getting my little itsy bitsy house done and getting a little candy on it. And you see, I can't even understand how they made some of these work. There's one of the winners was the Taj Mahal by Susan Allen. She made onion-shaped minaret towers with cookies. I guess if you took them right out of the oven and I don't even know. Well, I think next year we'll have to do an interview with Susan and find out what she did. But so this is the winners of the gingerbread tour through Kent and some really great projects. And again, some nice photos from Melissa Roth-Chernisky. Mm-hmm. And again, some of the big stories of the year, the two eagle rescues,
yeah.
Really a big deal. And of course, there's an eagle family living on at the sort of the bend in Cornwall. And I'm sort of waiting for somebody, as you'll see on our next page, there's been a petition started by people who live on that River Road section of West Cornwall near the covered bridge, objecting to the possibility of sort of a sewage treatment plant there, you know, on a very small scale. And I think that everybody's worried it's going to be this huge, smelly, disgusting thing. You know, nobody's going to ever put something like that on the Housatonic River. But there are eagles nesting there. And I'm waiting for somebody to kind of say, wait, we're not going to do a bunch of construction here. There's you know, there's an eagle nest and that's a federally protected bird. But anyway, so there were these two eagle rescues here in the northwest corner. That's a photo of the one in Lime Rock. There was another that was released at Mudge Pond in Salisbury, and that was very exciting. And, you know, kudos to the wonderful Sharon Audubon team for the great work they did. And then, of course, we have a photo of the Connecticut Antique Machinery Show. Twice a year, one of my favorite activities, you go and you see in spring fewer shows, in autumn fewer machines, and in autumn more machines. But they have some great antique machines there, and people so proud of how they've kept them running, and so ingenious.
All right. How did they work at the cold?
You know, it's actually pretty warm when they do it, but there's going to be a moment when our electricity goes out, and we're all going to be thinking, we wish we knew how to work some of these old-fashioned machines.
All right, back to an eye on 2017. Bub Pitcher.
Yeah, that actually was a photo that did run in the regular Lakeville Journal, but it was such a great picture that we had to run it. And, you know, even 10 years ago we were saying we're starting to lose our World War II veterans, but there still are a number of them, and they came out for Memorial Day and Veterans Day presentations in our area towns. And, of course, Bub Pitcher, very beloved in Sharon, and what a great photo of him. And then World War One. Of course, there's nobody left from World War One. I don't believe around here, but the state has been digitizing mementos from World War One and putting them online. And a lot of people here have World War One memorabilia. Heather Chapman had come with stuff from her father. Harry Chapman had these fat photo albums that he'd kept, and a lot of other memorabilia. And that's a photo of her with Jason McGarry, who is the one who brought the state here to the Scoville Library for a digitization event. And then two of my favorite events of the year, the Pep Parade in Winsted, super joyful and a great way to bring people to downtown Winsted. And then the Round Hill Highland Games, which is a full day of, or actually a full weekend of Scottish activities at Lime Rock Park. The next one should be coming up in June. And I think they've been doing it for 93 years now.
All right. On the next page, Internet Aging Trucks and Snow Shoveling in Sharon.
Yep, the good, the bad, and the ugly in the town of Sharon. As you know, there's still some dead spots in the town of Sharon. They're trying to work with Northwest Connect, which is a local sort of grassroots organization to try and improve internet. I remember when people still didn't have cable, which I think is probably still true, but I think maybe people have leapfrogged that. But also on the other end, the rolling steel, as they call it, which is the town trucks, are aging. And again, you know, these equipments have to be replaced at a certain point, or it just becomes too expensive to repair them. And then the covered bridge, again, speaking of history, the charming covered bridge in West Cornwall that links to the town of Sharon is historic and beautiful and looks just like it did, but is actually, there's a steel infrastructure inside of that old-fashioned bridge to make it safe for the many, many cars that drive through it. And I believe we have a police blotter item this week for somebody that, once again, tried to drive a tall truck through there. So they're replacing the steel, which is starting to age out, and they're going to put a new deck on it. And the covered bridge will be closed briefly in September, and work should be starting this spring.
All right. I want to once again mention obituaries. A couple of ones that touched me was to see Mark Herschel passed away, and then Barbara Pogue also passing away.
Right. A lot of notable people. And, of course, everybody in the obits is important to many people. But Mark Herschel, we were very surprised to see that died at the age of 67. I'm not really sure what happened. John Campbell from Campbell and Keeler in Millington passed away. Scylla Morrow, again, another great protector of the Housatonic River and from an iconic Cornwall family, and yes, Barbara Pogue, a very beloved and a great loss to the area, and Eric Ridingsword, again, a very sudden and unexpected young death. So our condolences to all those families.
All right, we'll go on to the editorial page. Time to develop appreciation for our town centers and a listing of each town and the town centers.
Janet Manka, who is our publisher and editor-in-chief, had written a wonderful editorial about all of the work that's being done very quietly in our towns. And again, this is all part of the effort of trying to keep our towns vital, of trying to get people to move to our towns. When I first moved here in 1993, the town of Sharon was completely run down, and the green was kind of grim. You know, even the house that we bought hadn't been painted, I think, in 50 years. And when you look at it now, it's hard to imagine. It's all so spruce, and there's been incredible energy, especially from Rafe Churchill and Heidi Hendricks, to upgrade the buildings in that central area. There's now a wine bar, and there's a coffee shop, and there's Heidi's opened a decorating shop. The same thing's going on in Kent. The Kent ownership group there has completely reconfigured the Kent Village, which is off the main street and it's privately owned, so they could actually move roads around and dramatically reconfigure some buildings. North Canaan's got the depot. We've got a big story. I got a tour with Charlie Parati yesterday. The depot's probably going to open in 2 weeks. You know, nobody's, don't hold your breath, but it looks fantastic in there. So all of these towns are revitalizing in a way that, you know, 10, 20 years ago, I don't think that we really could imagine it. So, you know, when we say shop local, you really have an incentive now. There's some great places to go, and Janet's got a great listing of them.
All right. Now, we only have about 2 minutes left, so we might as well get on the compass.
Oh, my goodness. We have a great two great articles from Emily Gates, one about an art show at Argazi. It's their annual gold, black, and white, and she's got a listing of some of the very interesting artists in it, but also down at the Eckert Gallery, some of the really famous artists in a show in Kent at the new Eckert Gallery. That's one of the great things about living here is we get some really world-class art in all media. The Sharon Playhouse is opening its winter season. They're completely reconfiguring how they do business. They're going to have shows through the winter, including cabarets, and I think their first one is coming up on January 13th. And Leon Graham reviewing The Shape of Water, a very kind of indie-looking film, which he loved and highly recommends. And that's our compass. And some great Viewpoint articles, if you have time to look at them, Rich Kessin and Dick Olive.
Great job on the phone there, Cynthia.
For someone who doesn't like phone, you just did splendidly.
Well, you guys are great, and thank you for all you do.
All right, we'll speak to you next week.
Okay, bye-bye.
Take care. That is This Week in the Lakeville Journal here on Robinhood Radio. And, of course, you can catch it on demand at robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Click on This Week in the Lakeville Journal.